Welcome back to the CBMW podcast, your refuge from the sexual revolution and safe space from the culture's gender madness. I'm Jonathan Swan, your host and editor of Icon, a journal for biblical anthropology. I'm joined today by CBMW's operations director and Icon managing editor, Michael Carlino. Michael, thanks for joining the show today.
Hey, overjoyed to be here with you.
Awesome. Today's special guest on the show is David Clausen. David is the author of the recently published book, Life After Roe, Equipping Christians in the Fight for Life Today. David is also the director of the Center for Biblical Worldview at Family Research Council. David, welcome to the show.
Jonathan, joy to be with you. Thank you.
David, how much guilt do you feel for working for an organization that the Southern Poverty Law Center has designated a hate group?
Oh my goodness. It is a mark of pride around here, brother. And to that point, Jonathan, you know, 2012, for anyone that's unaware, we actually had a shooter enter this building because Family Research Council had taken a stand for marriage. We partnered with Chick-fil-A, and a shooter came in here with 100 rounds of ammunition and about a dozen Chick-fil-A sandwiches that he was planning on stuffing in the faces of dead FRC staffers. So it's about six years before I came on staff, but our building manager heroically took a bullet to the arm, but then was able to subdue the would-be assassin. So and it was inspired by the Southern Poverty Law Center's designation of us as a hate group. And so we definitely wear that as a badge of honor, but realize there's some crazy folks in the world.
There sure are. Well, we're thankful for the strong stands you take. And no, I had actually forgotten about that major headline just 13 or so years ago. All right.
Somehow y'all are the haters in that scenario.
That's exactly right.
Insanity.
David, what is the Family Research Council and what's your role there as director of the Center for Biblical Worldview?
Yeah, for anyone unaware, we're a public policy organization based here in Washington, D.C., founded in 1983. So about 42 years ago by James Dobson. James Dobson had been invited to an event at the White House by then President Jimmy Carter and was just really burdened with the way family policy was being discussed, kind of the higher echelons of American public policy. And so went back to with some other leaders. They prayed and in 1983 launched our organization as a ministry of focus on the family. We broke off in the 90s and have been here in Washington, D.C. ever since. We're basically the largest social conservative organization. So you might be familiar with Heritage or some other groups that have a larger portfolio. But we really focus on the social issues, marriage, sexuality, life, the dignity of the human person. So we've been doing that for 42 years. And about 5 years ago, our president, Tony Perkins, came to me and said, we need to be doing more for pastors and Christian parents. And so that's when we started our Center for Biblical Worldview. George Barna, the well-known researcher, is a part of that. And so we try to provide resources to come alongside pastors, just Christian lay people, parents, to think biblically about all of life.
Excellent. And your all's website, frc.org, is that right?
Yeah, frc.org for the organization. You can go to frc.org/worldview to see some of the worldview-specific resources we've developed over the last few years.
Excellent. Thanks, David. Now, we brought David on the show to discuss his article in the latest issue of Icon, and it's titled, Our Pronatalist Moment, A Christian Evaluation. David, what is pronatalism, and what is our pronatalist moment?
Yeah, so pronatalism, if I were to define it kind of succinctly, is really just the belief that having more children is a personal virtue and a social good. That's how I define it in Icon. This is a movement that for the last several years has been growing in attention. And I think it really burst on the scene really earlier this year in a particular way with the second Trump administration. And some of their policies, you have Secretary of Transportation, Secretary Duffy, who's been saying things that sound very pronatalist. J.D. Vance, I led with this in my Icon article, actually, at the March for Life, just a few days after being inaugurated as vice president, talking about the importance of having more children, the importance of babies. And so I think just broadly speaking, anyone in the pronatalist movement would say they're really affirming the good of children. And again, at that point, I think, of course, as Christians, we should affirm that as well.
What, David, are the driving concerns? Like, what has led to this moment, this movement that you describe?
Yeah, really simply, it is the declining birth rate. So this is not something I've paid a lot of attention to until recently. But in 2023, I think that's the latest year from which we have data, the CDC, so the Center for Disease Control, said that we were at 1.62 births per woman. So that is well below the replacement rate of 2.1. And so if you think about that, that is unsustainable. Elon Musk, a very outspoken person kind of in this movement, he has talked about the birth rate as one of the biggest threats to civilization. He put that tweet out a couple of years ago. And it, Jonathan, it's not just the United States. Every Western country, every developed nation, except Israel, actually, has a birth rate below the replacement level. And so this is going to have implications for a whole host of things. Think about labor shortages. Think about things like Social Security. Think about, I mentioned in the article that I wrote, economic stagnation, military readiness, elder care. Look no further than Japan with their aging population. I've seen articles on how they're thinking about introducing robots into elder care facilities in Japan because there's not enough people to actually run it. And so these are all implications, things, so to speak, that flow downstream when you have a cataclysmically low birth rate. So I think that, if I had to put it, that right there, Jonathan, is kind of the precipitating issue that has gotten a lot of people concerned, Christian and non-Christian.
David, what are some of the solutions, the proposed solutions of this movement? And what are some of the cautions that you give in your article for Christians specifically? How ought we to think about what the proposed solutions are to the demographic decline?
Well, some of the proposed solutions read like straight off the pages of a dystopian novel, honestly. Because I think rightly people are diagnosing the problem is that we have a shortage of babies. We have a shortage of children. And so you enter this mindset of, well, we need to do, you know, whatever means possible to try to raise this birth rate. In the article, and by the way, this is so interesting, you know, folks that are really championing this would be folks that you're familiar with kind of from the Silicon Valley world. So like a Peter Thiel or like an Elon Musk. But they're investing hundreds of millions of dollars into these kind of advanced reproductive technologies. Some of them, again, like I said, are just very dystopian. One of them would be artificial wombs. This is not something that they've actually done yet, but they're spending millions of dollars. Another one, and this is something I hadn't really thought deeply about until Emma Waters, who I know also wrote an article for you guys in Icon. She talked about what's called IVG. This is in vitro gametogenesis, which involves the creation of sperm or egg cells from other cell types. So kind of think pluripotent stem cells. Okay. And so again, I don't want to get too far into the weeds, but there are these startups. One startup, I think it was $800 million in 2022 in these startup companies. So again, this is a massive, hard to wrap your mind around that kind of money that are providing couples struggling with infertility, so-called options. And if I can't, let me highlight one for you, Jonathan, that I mentioned in the article that
Please.
Folks should be aware of. There's this one startup called Orchid. This is a fertility company that launched 4 years ago. So again, relatively new, but they utilize what's called embryonic polygenic screening. What is that? Well, this allows prospective parents to screen their embryos for all sorts of issues. They actually can sequence 99% of an embryo's genomes And they will provide a risk score, like a risk calculation. So it's not just, oh, does this embryo have the potential to have Down syndrome, which that kind of genetic testing has been around for a while. Now, this allows you to go even to things like potential eye color or skin shade or athletic disposition. And so you can see very quickly how, as a pro-life Christian, this gets into very uncertain waters.
Oh, no doubt. I want to read something that you wrote and have you just sort of explain it to us. You state, quote, "Children must never be regarded merely as a means to an end." And you go on to sort of explain that, more babies for the sake of more babies. "The pro-family approach recognizes marriage as the best foundation for child rearing, while the pronatalist approach often focuses on increasing fertility without considering the essential family and moral context that helps children thrive. For Christians, the pro-family model is the biblical standard and must take precedence over any utilitarian approach that reduces children to economic assets or demographic tools." So can you explain the importance of this distinction that you've made between being pro-family and merely pronatalist?
Yeah, again, if I had to differentiate between those two kind of approaches, again, just being merely, emphasis on merely pronatalist, is just more children for the sake of all the things that I just mentioned. You know, we need to have a military, right? We need to have more people paying into Social Security. So there's all these utilitarian considerations, of which are significant. I'm not saying those are not important. We need to, military readiness is important. Elder care is important. But for those of us who are Christians coming at these issues, I think it was Emma Waters in her article who talked about a package deal of marriage, sex, and procreation. That is a Christian ethic. If you were thinking about a biblical anthropology that takes seriously Genesis 1 and Genesis 2, there are goods that God has designed that, again, to use Waters' language, is kind of a package deal. And so I think the moral context is significant. I talk about it at the end of my article, you know, even the social science bears out that children are best served when they're raised in a context with a married mom and dad. When you start disconnecting those ends, you disconnect those goods, is what I'm trying to say. You're going to have an ethic that is not a Christian ethic at all. And so keeping these things together, relationship, marriage, procreation, all of this matters for a biblical sexual ethic and just a biblical ethic in general.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Dave, because I think this goes, whether you're dealing with IVF or surrogacy or all these questions, I love how Oliver O'Donovan years ago now in his excellent work, Begotten, Not Made, emphasizes the distinction between being begotten versus being manufactured. And right, and at the heart of a lot of these denatured attempts at having children is it treats them like a commodity that can be put together in a test tube, as opposed to the fruit of love between a husband and wife, which is so central to the entire biblical storyline. And I'm just wondering, as you think about this and you think about the particular threat that a mere pronatalism, if we were to call it that, that may pose to the church, what are some of the symptoms or rotten fruits that might show up in our congregations or in our communities if we accept only a mere pronatalism?
Yeah, great question, Michael. And I think something that has been in the news just the last couple of years, and I know someone we all three of us admire and respect, Dr. Moeller, has been a real clear thinker on the subject of IVF, in vitro fertilization. Again, when you think about something like infertility, this is something, I don't know the exact percentage, but it's epidemic in a lot of places. And with infertility, a lot of folks look at that and say, well, we need to get around whatever the underlining issues related to a woman's infertility or a man's infertility. And you try to come up with a whole other thing. Again, Andrew Walker, in his explanation, reminded me that, you know, in vitro, literally in petri dishes, that you're creating this life. Well, what are you doing again? You're decoupling procreation from the God-ordained means by which life is to enter the world. And so, again, can I conceive of a potential situation where a couple can practice IVF in an ethical way where they're just fertilizing one embryo? Well, maybe. But as IVF is practiced in this country with a cycle of IVF, it costs $10,000 to $15,000. You're going to get 10 to a dozen fertilized embryos. Well, again, to answer the question, Michael, a mere pronatalist perspective is going to say, well, by any means necessary, by the way, and you can put a Christian gloss on this, children are a great good. Think about the importance of children. It's always seen as a blessing. Children are seen as a gift. So the couple that's greatly desiring a children child, you know, why not utilize some of this technology? Well, again, you have to keep these goods together, which is why I think some of these things are really problematic. And I think as a church, we need to be speaking to these things and thinking about these things carefully.
Yeah. And if I would add to that, one quick thing would be when you decouple the goods within marriage, you then start removing marriage potentially. And another threat that I potentially see becoming significant is well-intentioned people thinking that a woman who is single could pursue surrogacy, could pursue other means of having children, especially if we're talking frozen embryos, all those kind of things as snowflake adoptions, everything, as ways to help in this, that would actually be further extending this decoupling. Is that, do you see that, or do you sense that as a potential threat in our churches?
Absolutely. I think my PhD supervisor, actually Ken Magnuson, I think it was maybe 4 or 5 years ago, wrote an article for ETS on the issue of surrogacy. And I think Dr. Magnuson's kind of ahead of the curve, so to speak, in drawing our attentions to this. And something like that actually is really exploitive as well. The kind of the rental womb industry. Honestly, what was interesting is that was one of the things that came out with the Russia-Ukraine war in those early months. How many Ukrainian women were actually a part of this surrogacy industry, carrying the babies of wealthy Westerners. And so again, good intentions, right? But look what happens when you separate these things. You end up with a lot of unintended heartbreak, honestly.
Yeah, maybe I'll conclude by reappropriating Jesus's statement that what he brought together, let no man separate. David, thank you so much for joining the program today.
Jonathan, joy to be with both of you. Thanks again for the opportunity to contribute.
Absolutely. Well, until next time, visit cbmw.org to find more biblical resources on the family, gender, and sexuality.